You're listening to Dude Podcast with JC and Will. Put some pep in that step. Enjoy the show.
Hi, I'm JC.
And I'm Will.
And you're
listening to
Dude. Yeah, so this is, we're recapping Zoolander. This is part two.
Mm-hmm.
Really, basically, we got up to the, he's been brainwashed, right? We had, we had the amazing video with Will Ferrell, which that in and of itself, just YouTube, Little Cletus, and you can find those, just the recordings of that, absolutely incredible. So yeah, I would highly recommend, but that leads into, what I think may be the greatest, maybe one of the greatest scenes in cinema of all time. It's the walk-off.
Oh, yeah.
The walk-off is just absolutely everything about it, from the cameos, like, I don't know, everything about this scene is incredible. How people talk to Derek, like everything. Well,
Billy
about
Zane kind of, I mean,
oh,
yeah.
Billy Zane.
Billy he makes Zane, whole scene for sure.
Billy's got it. That's where you see Billy. He goes, when you gonna drop Magnum on us, buddy? He goes, gotta tame the beast before you let it out of its cage. And everything that Billy Zane does, like, just if you go back and just hone in on Billy Zane, like, he's like, it may be the best acting of Billy Zane's career, which may not be saying much, unfortunately, if you have seen Billy Zane, like, but he's really good. Like, there's
he's
like just
he's a very handsome man, too.
He really is. He is a startlingly handsome. Like, the guy pulls off the shaved head maybe better than almost anybody.
He does. Yeah, he really does. Yeah. Yeah. But that's the scene that you and I quoted in middle school religiously. That whole exchange between Hansel and Zoolander.
Yeah. So yeah, there's this great cameo. It's, they're hanging out in a club, and then there is, you know, of course, this is where all the cool models go, all the cool it people. And of course, who does Derek run into but Hansel, in a spirited exchange. And then there's sort of that West Side Story sort of element. What is it? The Sharks versus the Jets, or basically you have, you know, Derek and his group versus Hansel and his group, and they decide the way to this is also a great big reveal and hilarious idea by Ben Stiller and the writing staff, is how do models settle conflicts? They actually have what's called a walk-off, and which is hilarious because they're just making fun of, I mean, like, the runway walk is so funny in and of itself, and the fact that they use it to weaponize against each other, a way to battle against each other, is absolutely hilarious. And the fact that, like, everybody wants to see this is, again, the whole movie is just it just makes what is such a ridiculous profession so funny.
Was there a part of you growing up alone watching this movie? You know, and we're, you know, almost in high school, but watching that movie made me feel like, I know it was silly, I know it was sensationalized, but it did feel a bit like it was pulling back the curtain to what, like, behind the scenes of, like, stardom and, like, fancy rich people, like, and hot people were like in New York City. Even though now as an older person, I'm like, it can't be anything like that.
We don't really know what modeling is like at a super, that was the other thing too in my head, even though it's a funny parody and it's a joke, like, in my head I kind of, even at that age, is like, man, I guess he is the most handsome guy in the world. Like, I knew he wasn't, but I was like, I didn't, like, you know what I mean? I was like, I guess, like, yeah, like, all these guys, they could be the most handsome people in the world. I completely agree with you, and that was one of the reasons, like, it still was a cool movie.
Like, even just the absurdity of Derek living with four other models, and they all had bunk beds together, and they, like, you know, dressed up in onesies and, like, made smoothies in the morning together. Like, in my head, that I never questioned. I was like, yeah, that models live in homes together. And they're all, like, you know, besties. And they all, like, just go to the clubs at night. And I don't know, maybe that's a version of that might be true. But they just made it so silly. But in my head, I'm like, oh, they're peeling back the curtain here.
There's also just... Again, there's just the subtle dialogue in this movie. When they're going to wherever, like, they're at the first warehouse or club or wherever they're at, and they go to the warehouse for the walk-off. At the end of it, something happens, Billy Zane tries to warn Derek. He's like, man, I don't know if you should be doing this. He's like, put a cork in it, Zane. Like, just, like... And then, like, you, like, close ups on Billy's, like, you know, he's got that toothpick. He's like, you know, like, I don't know, man. There's so much really good. It's just chock full of great, great things, great cameos. So they get to the facility, wherever, the warehouse where they're going to do this walk off. And supposedly, here's what was interesting on the director commentary. Like, I guess they didn't really know, like, my understanding is, like, you know how they have, like, the two shots that are side by side when they're, you know, when they start doing the walk off and stuff like that? That was, like, kind of by accident. Like, supposedly that came out of an edit for, like, an early preview of the film. And they were like, oh, shoot, like, that's how this scene needs to go. Like, they didn't even really have it as, and which is great. So how a walk-off works, right? So I think that's a very important thing. Will, would you describe to the people, what is a walk-off, Will?
Well, it's described by David Bowie, who is the judge of this walk-off.
Yeah, who just appears.
He says...
And also, sorry... Strange observation about David Bowie, and I think this all the time, takes his sunglasses off in the most unique way I've ever seen a human being take off his sunglasses.
I believe I might be of service.
Like, it is cool. Like, I would struggle if I tried to do that. I'd be dragging one of the sunglasses across my face. It wouldn't work beautifully with David Bowie. And
it works. Yeah,
he's
it
got
works.
Such cool hair, man. He's got, like, anime human hair. You know what he has? David Bowie, and he is one of the only human beings who has this. Him and John Resnick of the Goo Goo Dolls have that strange, like, they look like anime characters with their hair.
Yeah, they do. It's like they both look like freeze-dried Keith Urbans. Like, Keith Urban is just such a handsome man. I'm not saying David Bowie isn't handsome, but it's just kind of... Keith Urban is just a wildly handsome dude.
David Bowie is like David Bowie looks like if an alien came down and...
pretended to be Keith Urban.
Or Keith Urban, or, like, had a baby with Brad Pitt, and then you get, like... It's like the child. Like, it's like, it's handsome, but you're also, like... Something's off about this. Like, yeah. It doesn't look right. There's something, yeah. It's like AI handsome guy. Yeah. It's like, it's handsome, but
something
it may have, like,
off.
Extra finger. It has, like, seven fingers.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. But I'll say, of all the David Bowie looks, Zoolander might be his best look.
Yeah, man, he's excellent. So, like, a walk-off, yeah. So, Will, describe what a walk-off. So, as David Bowie... He's judging this walk-up, but how does it work?
Basically, it's just like, first model goes down, does his move, basically like runway moves, and then the second model has to go up and do the exact same thing.
It's like almost like a game of horse. right? Or like basketball, where like you shoot, somebody shoots, you have to shoot from the same position. That's essentially the walk-off, right? So somebody does a move, somebody has to emulate that move and then go and then up it by something. So the final move is because, listen, you know, you got two heavyweights going at each other. Hansel realizes he has to channel some sort of energy that he's gotten, some spiritual energy, to be able to pull his underwear off his body by simply putting his hand down his pants. So
basically he shoves his hands in his pants and he starts moving around. Everyone's like, why is his hands in his pants? And all of a sudden, without taking his pants off, he pulls his underwear out of his pants, unripped. And which is silly because it's not a model move, but somehow everyone was like, oh my God.
It is an incredible feat. If somebody could do that, I mean, that'd be an unbelievable party trick.
But my favorite part of that scene is when Zoolander goes up there and he has to duplicate pulling his underwear out of his pants. You see him walking down the runway and he's thinking, and you hear his inner voice go, thank God I wore underwear today.
Thank God I wore underwear today. Yeah, it was, it's just, it's hilarious. And then he pulls it out. It doesn't work. It's absolutely terrible.
Disqualified.
And then the graveyard scene happens with David Duchovny.
With JB Pruitt, the world's greatest hand model.
And they make David Duchovny look absolutely horrible.
I think they wanted to show him like he's a hand model. He doesn't got to worry about the face and the body. In fact, he even says, I'm a hand model, Mama. We're not like the face and body boys. We're a different breed.
No, I'm a hand. I think he calls himself a hand jockey at one point too. Yeah, a finger jockey or a finger jockey. I think he uses like all this like hand lingo, which is really funny. So yeah, so basically, David Zoolander's had this realization. Oh my gosh, Mugatu's trying to brainwash me. Why is he trying to do this? He goes to this grave site. He finds that all these models, I think they only lived to be like 30 something years old. They all died around the same age. And he starts coming to the realization that all these models, all these giant events in world history, used models to basically be the assassin.
And that kind of ties it back to the beginning of the movie when you're trying to figure out like these elites and they're talking about why they want to kill the prime minister of Malaysia. And you're kind of, the whole movie, you kind of like, you're like, okay, this is weird, but I don't understand it. That scene with Dave Duchovny really like makes you go, okay, now I get why. Like he kind of explains it.
Yeah.
And it's like, insane.
Low key. So one of the other really funny things is he keeps his hand, his actual model hand, in like a hyperbaric trick chamber. And it's a beautiful hand that they put in that hyperbaric chamber. But it's also really funny that like David Duchovny has been wearing this hyperbolic chamber on his hand for like 20 something years. And he still tries to grab things. Like, can he actually grab things? Like,
yeah.
Of course he can't. Like you would have thought he would have learned that. But that's a funny thing. Another like low-key super funny thing is as Derek Zoolander is going through the gravesite and he's looking at all these past models who comes to the realization they had all been involved and they've been hired for murder basically due to being brainwashed. The things that are on the tombstones are hilarious. Derriere extraordinaire.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about that scene. Yeah, there's some really funny things on
there. They're great. Right. And they're all just like, there's one that's just like a butt. It's just like, it's like a tombstone. And it's just a butt.
Min Correjo. Derriere extraordinaire.
92 minus 63. None of them ever made it past 30.
I did.
Who are you?
And that's when things are heightened to the point of like, hey, all models are in danger. I'm on the run. Somebody's either trying to kill me or I'm a trained killer. I gotta be careful. And that's where he ends up, you know, going the last place that people would look for him, which is Hansel's cool pad. And I will tell you, Hansel's pad, that the place that he lives in, it's funny. I went back and I don't know why. I was watching clips from, I think it was Ninja Turtles 2. I think it was Ninja Turtles 2. Have you seen clips or watched like the original Ninja Turtles 2 anytime soon, Will?
Recently? No, I can't say I have, no.
There's no doubt in my mind that whoever designed this like did copy that, because it looks exactly like, the loft looks exactly like the Ninja Turtles 2 where the children live. But it's really, really cool. And it's just hilarious because supposedly, listening to the director's note, like, it really makes me respect Owen Wilson that much more. Apparently, he improvs a ton. Like most of his really funny lines, like, he, like, did something else with. Like, he had the line, and he was, like, the whole, like, hello, like,
hello. Hello.
Parts of some of the things that are so iconic within this film were him just riffing with the general script itself. So they end up getting some sort of strange hallucinogenic tea, and then, you know, they end up all, you know, having a big orgy, which is hilarious.
But here's the thing, the orgy, like when we say orgy, I know like people haven't seen it and think, oh, it's gross. They have this nasty scene. It can't be any more, like, insane. It wasn't, you don't see anything. In fact, if you saw it and had no context to it, you wouldn't know that it was an orgy. You would think they were on a carousel or something.
And the funny thing, too, and the only reason you really know it's an orgy, quote unquote, is because you just start randomly seeing other people, other side characters from the loft's face. But I do want to say maybe the other funniest parts, the scene directly before the orgy scene is just absolute hilarity. And this is where you find out Matilda's backstory. And the funny thing is Matilda opens up and like she's talking about a very sensitive topic, which is, you know, she used to be overweight and, you know, she dealt with something. And the funny thing is I used to be husky, or I used to be fat or something like that.
No, she said, in seventh grade, I used to be the fat kid.
And Derek just goes, ooh, and just goes, or yuck, or something like that. And the music stops on that cue. And it's like, it's so wildly inappropriate. Like when you watch it, it's jarring.
That could never pass today, like making a joke about bulimia.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't make jokes about bulimia. Yeah, you really shouldn't. I mean, to a degree, it's a very sensitive topic, so you gotta be really, you know, I feel like every joke can be made, but you gotta be careful, you know? And this just has no regard for any, like there's no regard for it, because again, the one of the funny themes throughout the film itself is mispronouncing words, misunderstanding words, like just like the fact that these people don't have a grasp of the basic English language is hysterical in and of itself. So the fact that like she's having this moment, there's already been that like break and the ooh. And then they get back to the story and she's describing bulimia. And I think another, if we're just being honest as the audience, I don't think everybody knows what it is. And so the fact that the joke is you can read minds, which is like, so like, what's, you're psychic? Like, I don't even know, like, What, like, what? Telepathic? Was it telepathy? Is that what he was thinking? Like, you never hear what word he thinks it is, but, like, you can read minds. That is so funny, because it is one of those things, if you're the audience, I guarantee most people were sitting there watching going, I know that word, that sucks, and they're thinking in their head, like, what does that mean? And then, like, it just followed up with that. It's just, it's incredible, but,
And so, we talked about that in the first episode, but, you know, I said that that particular scene, that particular line is maybe the hardest I've ever seen you laugh. And my favorite part of that is not just Derek saying, like, can't believe it. He thinks that means she can read her minds, but Hansel looks over and he's like, yeah. He doesn't know what bulimia means either. Like, it's just very funny. Yeah.
They're morons. So. Yeah, so there's you know, there's that. Then really the next big scene is going to the Darren Lee campaign. So what it is the idea is it's the setup. It's really the opportunity for Derek to assassinate the Prime Minister of Malaysia, and they want to do it in public. And one of the other hilarious things about this fictitious world of male modeling that they created is, like, they've put it up there with, like, I don't know, competitive sports, where, like, these runways are all on TV. Like, you know what I mean? Because, like, you know, there's so as this event is unfolding, just an interesting side story is John Voight, right, who's only been one other scene earlier in the film, is at a bar in southern New Jersey in a coal mining town in this crappy bar watching the Dara Leak coverage. Like, it's covered like a sporting event, which is kind of a funny random thing. But so yeah, it's another just great, you know, it's a runway show. All these people are wearing trash and just ridiculous, terrible outfits, and it's chock full of celebrities all throughout the audience, and the goal is for Justin Theroux, who we didn't know was Justin Theroux, who plays the DJ, to play Freddie for Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Relax, don't do it, so that it allows Derek to go into, you know, his murder mode.
It's a trigger response.
Yeah, it's to essentially,
like, hypnosis,
Prime Minister of Malaysia. But yeah, Mugatu, just absolutely unbelievable. Everything he says is funny. Like, everything Will Ferrell says. I'm going to give you an analogy for Will Ferrell. When Will Ferrell was at his best, follow me here. Will Ferrell in his prime, and I'm saying, like, prime, like Anchorman 1, like Ricky Bobby, right coming off of SNL or like mid SNL, like right in his heyday. That guy is the Rumpelstiltskin of comedy. And follow me.
A random comparison. Rumpelstiltskin of comedy.
Here's where I'm going with this. Here's why I say he's the Rumpelstiltskin of comedy, right? What did Rumpelstiltskin do, Will? Do you know what Rumpelstiltskin did?
Didn't he eat children?
Yeah, I think he may have eaten children, but that was,
so that's why I'm a little confused. So Will Ferrell ate comedy like little children. I get it now.
No.
The parallels are uncanny, JC.
Here's what it is. Follow me here. I think you're gonna like this analogy. Rumpelstiltskin, he had the ability to spin, I think it was hay, into gold, right? He would take hay or straw, and he would turn it into gold, right? I think Will Ferrell does that with, like, any dialogue. Like, anything he says in the movie, anything, like, I invented Pinocchio necktie, like, That whole, like, I invented the POT, the key necktie. What did you do, Derek? No way! Everything he is given in this film is funny. And he is just, he's gold. He's so good during it. So yeah, just if you go back and watch, just key in on everything he says. It's so good.
But yeah, it really is.
Yeah, so basically the whole camp, yeah, there's the whole, like, they're gonna try to get Derek to murder the Prime Minister of Malaysia. There's a scene beforehand that's pretty funny with Owen and Ben, and they have, you know, they dress up to go undercover to get these files that they're gonna try to use to expose Maury Ballstein and also expose just this giant campaign that's been going on. But like the funny thing was that what you find out there at the end, like right before Derek hears the music and goes to try to kill the Prime Minister of Malaysia when he's doing the actual walk itself, is it goes almost exactly like how they brainwashed him. Meaning, like, all the actors and celebrities that were in that, like, earlier scene, like, are in fact there on site cheering him on, or sitting in the front row. And you hear the whole, like, don't be distracted by the beautiful people, like, the monologue, basically, that, like, that Will Ferrell had recorded at that time. But one of the... Gary Shandling, man.
I mean, you know that was intentional. They put him as the last. He said, don't be distracted by the beautiful celebrities. And then Gary Shandling pops up, which, I mean, beautiful in his own way for sure, but I would not put him in the modeling. He's the last person I would think to be in a modeling movie.
Yeah. So they, luckily, I do love the idea that they do not understand how computers work and how they're trying to, like, bust Mugatu, is they end up physically bringing the computer, throwing it down the ground, like, we got you, because all the files are in the computer, thinking that they could, like, bust out the files when, in fact, they destroy the computer itself. But, yeah, the fact that Derek Zoolander saves the day, he actually, in fact, saves the day because Mugatu throws a ninja star at the Prime Minister of Malaysia. Once, you know, they kind of bust what's about to go on, they break up the fact that the DJ can't play the music anymore, and they sort of reveal that Mugatu's in trouble. So Mugatu panics and is like, well, I'm going to murder the Prime Minister of Malaysia if you won't do it, Derek. And he brings out this Chinese throwing star, which is shaped like an M, which is just funny in and of itself. He stops it with his look, with his patented, you know, Magnum look, which has been alluded to throughout the whole film, that he has this special look, and this look is there's power behind it. And I think what's funny is, I'm sure, and this was sort of noted in the film, I think there were intentions to have the looks be different looks at some point. And then I think they just realized, what if Blue Steel, they're all the same look. And the only person who sees that is the audience and Mugatu. And Mugatu kind of breaks the third wall almost. And like, well, I guess it's not breaking the third wall, but he's the only one who like acknowledges, like, he doesn't have multiple looks. He has three looks. They're all the same look. And yet this look is powerful enough that it literally stops a flying Chinese throwing star and stops in midair and saves the Prime Minister of Malaysia. And I also don't know, like, then everyone's happy. Derek saved the day. He's restored his reputation. Him and Matilda make out. It's like, you know, the love story, everything comes to fruition. But I don't know. Another just funny scene. Actually, like, The Prime Minister of Malaysia is a funny little man for some reason. We talked about this on part one, where he just makes us laugh because he's just like, ooh, ooh. He's making noises the whole time. And he's such a meek, he's a cute little old man. Like, he really is, like, the cutest old man you've ever seen.
His one line is pretty adorable, too. He just says, "Thank you, Derek Zoolander, for saving my life." And you're like, yeah.
Derek Zoolander, for saving my life. And then he speaks in Mandarin or whatever. I don't know how he responds. And then you find out that Derek can speak multiple languages. It responds that way. But yeah, and then basically at the end of the film, you find out that Derek's opened his own center for children who can't read good and want to learn to do other things too. He's had a child with Matilda. Maury Ballstein is teaching a class of children. He's yelling at children about how to negotiate deals, which is just funny in and of itself. Also, just a callback real quick to great additional Jerry Stiller monologue near the end. That's where he basically he turns from being the bad guy to saying, "Hey, I'm going to turn myself in and go against this, you know, dark, evil, shadow murder team." And he calls his wife to bring up like a hard drive or a floppy disk, or I can't remember what he describes it as. But then there's this whole like minute and a half of him not being able to get off the phone and talking about what exit to use in order to like go around traffic. And just the subtlety, like,
basically what's funny about it is he's this executive of this massive modeling agency. He represents all the most famous models in the world. I mean, that's what they portray him as. And then he gets on the phone with his wife and he has this like normal Midwestern like conversation with his wife about helping him out and like putting the casserole in the Tupperware. Like it's the funny part about it is just how normal it is. It's not like the conversation of a very rich man.
And I think this is why Jerry Stiller was just so funny in his older years, is like he's so naturally like an old, like a Long Island grandfather, Jewish grandfather. Like it's just he's perfect. And he sounds like I've heard my father-in-law have those kind of conversations, and he slips into it so naturally. It's so stinking funny, man. It's just like it's just brilliant. It doesn't feel like he's acting at all. Like that's the stuff. Like that's the unbelievable acting. You're like, I don't think he's I can't tell if he's acting. Is he really this guy? I don't know. But just anyway, so movie holds up. Movie's hilarious. Absolutely loved it. Like going back, rewatching again, Will, final thoughts, like, or just like in summation, what did you think
of rewatching it? I mean, like I said last episode, I think it still holds up. It was one of our favorite movies growing up. I still think I watched it again before this episode and before we recorded tonight, and it just made me realize comedies, I think, has missed little nuanced things. Like when you talk about Will Ferrell putting his own flavor on it, it goes down to little things like the faces he makes and the way he runs and like just maybe not even things that are necessarily in the dialogue. And I think that's what Zoolander did so well. When you watch it, it's things that aren't necessarily being said that still make me laugh so hard. I think that's why I think it's brilliant, because every little detail, it's meant to be silly and absurd and goofy. And that's why I think it's still one of my favorite comedy movies.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really, really, really funny. And it's really crude. And let me put it this way. If you were like dating somebody new, like let's say you just started like dating somebody and you didn't really know where they stood, like how far you could push certain comedies and stuff, it would not be a film that I would like recommend early. Like, you want to know that, because there are things in this that could trigger people. Like, they make light of some very serious things.
Nothing highly offensive, but I think if you are particularly touchy about some things, like the fact that their whole modeling campaign was based off the homeless.
It's silly, but
if they don't really, it's nothing offensive.
They make fun of homeless, unhoused. They make light of bulimia and just body dysmorphia and stuff like that in general.
Even like child labor, like they make not child light labor, of it, but like
child labor. But also, like, it's one of the, like, again, all those things. I'm a big believer in everything should be able to, we should be able to laugh about anything. And I think it's done in a way that's really funny. I'm just saying in 2025, I think it's all fantastic. I think it's all very funny and it holds up. And it does, there's no doubt in my mind, it holds up excellent. You just need to be, I would only tell somebody, just be judicious in who you're watching it with. But the
difference is it doesn't have an edge to it. It's such a silly movie that it kind of takes that bite away from it feeling like it's being mean. Or at least maybe that's from our, you know, perspective.
Hey, you want to hear something crazy on the... I think it's crazy.
Lay it on me.
On the director's commentary. And you can kind of tell, like, a nerve is hit. It's interesting. So the director's commentary is Ben Stiller and like two other writers, right? And they're just talking the whole time. And it they must have recorded it. I mean, they probably recorded it pre the DVD coming out, because it was very common for those director's commentaries to come out in conjunction with the DVD or the Blu-ray, right? The DVD. That was like always like a cool feature. So that would have been, I mean, 2001 DVDs were coming out then, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That was like VHS and DVD. There was release of both at that time. Both those technologies were available at that time. Because I believe you had the VHS, or I had the VHS.
I had the VHS, but we had some friends that had the DVD, and we would watch the bonus features on it.
Yeah, because there was other really, really funny stuff on there. So the directors... not the directors, because the director's Ben. There's some comment at one point about how there's a close-up of Owen and Ben Stiller's face, and Ben Stiller makes a comment about his nose or something. There's some comment about like their nose. And both the writers are like, what the hell is wrong with Owen's nose? I'm straight up, like, they're like, it's not like, at first it's kind of funny, like they're like, haha, but like I'm like huh. And then Ben addresses it. Ben's like, oh, he broke his nose when he was a kid. And you can tell that the directors try to go, like, it's kind of bad, like the directors try to go back to like make fun of his nose again, and you can tell that, like,
no.
Ben like steps in to sort of be like, we're moving on from this. And I've always heard, you know, Owen Wilson doesn't watch his, I don't know if you know this, but Owen Wilson, like, famously doesn't watch his own movies, right? He's very sensitive, apparently doesn't like how, he's kind of sensitive about how he looks, which is, again, there's an irony to that because he plays a male model, but like he doesn't like watching himself on film. He's very strange about that. I think I've also heard he is kind of sensitive about, even though he's never gotten the work done, I've heard he kind of is sensitive.
I've heard that he's had enough people tell him not to do that because it's a differentiator. It kind of sets him apart, which is a wild note.
But it was just interesting to be like, this is something that, like, I'm like, I just, it was, It was bizarre because it's like, it's almost like they it's the kind of dialogue that should be in a director comment. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's like a film that shouldn't be recorded. And it almost felt like Ben Stiller had to keep them back. It was really interesting. And I'm sure that happens more in these director commentaries. Because it's almost like it's more like a podcast medium than anything else. It's like pre-podcast where it was just free flowing, these people talking. And it's kind of fascinating. You probably get things, you know, there's probably things that have been said in those commentaries that, like, if people went back and were like, oh, probably shouldn't have said that. Like, there probably is all kinds of layers. Because if I was picking up on that, I'm sure, like, over the years, there have been all kinds of that, because that was such a big part of, like, DVD culture. But anyway, I thought that was kind of fascinating, just sort of a weird nugget listening to it. But, man, absolutely hilarious movie. So glad I rewatched it. Everybody should rewatch it. Super funny, especially because, like, I'm sorry, like, there really is not, what's the last good, like, comedies, in my opinion, are now shows. Like, funny things are on TV now. I don't think there's great comedy films anymore. I heard Leslie Nielsen Naked Gun was excellent. That's the last funny movie I've heard.
I think the Naked Gun kind of hits some nostalgia for people, not because it's a remake or anything, or it's like a franchise, but because it kind of went back to just silly humor, funny joke, like joke after joke, being silly, doesn't have to have a point. It can just be smart writing, but also silly. And I think that's what I love about it, is the nostalgic feeling of, like, we grew up with really silly but smart humor. Like, Dumb and Dumber is another one. Like, all the jokes are really dumb, but it takes a smart brain to come up with that dumb writing. You know what I mean? I think that's why I like both those movies.
Yeah. And this was just this was a quintessential middle school movie, man. It was perfect. It really was.
Great.
Anything else, Will? Any last thoughts?
No, just go watch those old movies that you used to love in middle school and high school, because I think you might be surprised, like, how much you still love it. Because I really enjoy going back and watching Zoolander.
But the sad thing is, I think it's, like, hardwired in my brain. Like, I knew, like, it was scary to me, like, how it felt like an old home. Like, I was like, oh, I know where this is. Oh, I know that. I know this line is coming up. Oh, this is when that person, like, we watched that movie so many times. Yep. Like, I knew
That's
all
why
of it.
I just,
knew
it
all
felt
of it.
So nostalgic. It felt like, it felt like you were going back to your childhood home.
It was weird. It kind of was a bizarre, sort of like an out-of-body experience. I'm like, oh, my God. And then you probably get... That's the problem. That's why it sucks getting old. Because then, like, when you're old, this is how everything is. You're like, oh, that's how that cheeseburger. Like, everything's nostalgic when you're old. But, like, now, like, we're starting to get it, and we're like, oh, like, this is
okay. Get this. The weirdest thing when you get older is when you watch movies that you grew up watching, and then you figure out the age of the person during the movie. Your brain still thinks, like, oh, they're older than me there. Ben Stiller was 36 in that movie.
Wow.
Not much younger, but younger than us. It feels weird
It does feel weird. I mean, he was pretty established in his career at that point. How old is he now?
He's in his 60s for sure.
Oh, wow.
For sure. He's got to be close to our parents' age. 59.
Wow. Hey. Old Benny boy. All right, duties. Well, thank you for letting us go down memory lane. I really enjoyed it. Mr. Skaggs really enjoyed it. Like, subscribe. I know we went away for a long time, so it's hard to get consistent views, downloads, whatever. But we did see that we've got a little bit of an uptick, so... hopefully we keep doing this. We keep turning them out. You guys keep enjoying us rambling and you know, I'm going to end on this. I don't want to make, you know, try to, you know, make anybody sad or anything, but the world's a little bit of a scary place right now. And hopefully, just listen to the Dude podcast can kind of be like a nice, funny, you know, kind of way to escape, you know, lighthearted. It's kind of what we're trying to do. If I'm being really honest, it's a great way for me and my best friend to connect and talk, and hopefully you get some good juju out of it too. So, we will talk to you duties in a couple of weeks. We'll probably just be rambling about gosh knows what. And hopefully we get a producer on here at one point and do like a three-way, because he is one of the most interesting people I know. Mm-hmm. I think he's got some great stories that may be coming up here in the next couple of episodes, getting our producer, Mr. Parker Farrell, to come on to tell some stories and
see what it looks like to wear in his pants.
See what it looks like. I think I've definitely worn his pants before.
Shorts, for sure.
Pants.
Yeah, I think you've worn many of your friends' pants.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Socks.
Well, on that note, that's a great week, duties.
Enjoy your week, duties. Love you.